I only know a handful of truly wealthy people. Celebrities, however, are a handy example of what happens when people get rich quickly and sometimes unexpectedly. Although celebrities are usually above average in the looks department, they're probably no more intelligent than you or me. And that's why we can learn a lot from them in how they handle their cash. The problem is that most of the celebrity headlines seem to be about babies and breakups, and you rarely hear a celebrity talk candidly about money. Yes, you can look up the highest paid actress this year, which cast members just negotiated a record salary, or who is going bankrupt. But how often do you hear celebrities actually talk about how they spend or save their money? And what happens when you're so rich, you literally can't spend it all? I would love to hear Oprah Winfrey talk about what it's like to open her bank statements or ask Meryl Streep about her investments. What about the starlets who find themselves multi-millionaires in their 20s? How do they cope with the expectation of their families? Do they ever feel guilty about the money? I'm so curious about it. When actress Jennifer Lawrence shared so openly that she'd worried about being called a bitch if she negotiated for a higher salary for her work on the 2013 movie American Hustle, it was like a revelation for me. More money doesn't solve the underlying money blocks. Fear doesn't go away when you have money blocks. That's why people never feel like they have enough. Honest money confessions are rare. Maybe one day in the future, I'll have my own talk show where celebrity women can share their money blocks. Oh my God, it'd be so much fun. If I ever do, I guarantee that those blocks will be exactly like yours. It would be fascinating, right? Lessons from rich and poor celebrities. Watch any tacky reality TV show and you will see famous celebrities from the 80s and 90s who burnt through all their cash. It's almost fun to judge them for their excesses and poor decisions, but what if we have the same blocks, just on a different scale? When I was first interested in money, I'd read about Sarah Ferguson, Duchess of York, Courtney Love, LaToya Jackson, Judy Garland, Kerry Katona, Pamela Anderson, Misha Barton, Amy Winehouse, Lindsay Lohan. The list of women who seemingly blew entire fortunes on shopping, bad divorces, alcohol, drugs, and lavish lifestyle goes on and on and on. Each generation will have its rags to riches stories and will read about celebrity downfalls in the tabloids. It looks like celebrities with all their money, connections, and good looks aren't any better with their finances than the average population. You might think, well, if I had her money, life would be perfect. But celebrities don't have it together either. Why not? If you were to ask them, they would probably say that their finances were mismanaged by their financial team or stolen by their parents, that the economy was to blame, that they gave their wealth away to friends and family who took advantage of their generosity, or they'd say that $1 million doesn't go very far these days. Most of them would probably say they have no idea how it happened, just like most of us do when we're in debt or have no money at the end of the month. Seriously, where did it all go? How about we sum them all up with one blanket diagnosis? Money blocks. Celebrity women don't have much in common when you really look at it. Some were born rich, some poor. They have different ethnicities and varying degrees of talent and IQ. You could say that being in the public eye doesn't help you stay rich, but take an average neighborhood and you'll probably find plenty of similar stories just on a different scale. In my money boot camp, everyone's background is totally different. You might think that if only you'd grown up rich, you wouldn't have any money problems. Wrong. The exact same blocks hit women who grew up in completely different circumstances. So there's nothing inherently wrong in your background that can stop you from being rich. They are just the stories you made up about it. Serena Williams said, "I'm an athlete and I'm black and a lot of black athletes go broke. I do not want to become a statistic. So maybe I overcompensate, but I'm paranoid. Oprah told me a long time ago, you sign every check. Never let anyone sign any checks." Even though the figures are different, I'm guessing the issues that plague celebrities are the same ones that hold you back. The ones that keep you from hitting the six-figure mark in your business, from keeping more of your income, and from living the life you've always wanted. Piling more money on top doesn't deal with the underlying money issues. That's why it's so awkward when women email me in desperation asking how to win the lottery, because I know that it wouldn't really help. It might sound like an awesome solution, but chances are the money would be gone quickly for the same reasons that they're broke now. Money doesn't solve money blocks. Some celebrities, not just women either, seem to amass huge fortunes while others get it and lose it just as quickly. There are a lot of women that you assume were really rich who are faking their lifestyles. Conversely, there are the really quiet success stories. For example, did you know that Judy Shineland has made more than $45 million from the syndicated courtroom show Judge Judy? The show hasn't changed much over the years. Well, maybe she's got slightly fancier robe, but at various points, Shineland was the highest paid person on television and the 13th richest woman in entertainment, according to Forbes. She's earned more from her TV gig than Simon Cowell or David Letterman. Who knew? I'm guessing that she's an amazing negotiator because other women have been just as popular but earned far less from their talents. Sofia Vergara from the US TV show Modern Family was quietly amassing a huge fortune too. In 2014, she was the highest paid TV actor, not just actress. She earned more than Ashton Kutcher, the highest paid male that year, and beat the number two actress by $24 million. And that money wasn't just from her role in Modern Family. Girlfriend is a legit business boss lady with her own fragrance on the Home Shopping Network and endorsements from Diet Pepsi, Kmart, CoverGirl, Head & Shoulders, and more. Plus, she's the co-founder of Latin World Entertainment. I would love to hear about her money blocks, but I reckon she feels pretty good about herself. My lesson from Vergara is leverage. She took an ensemble role on a hit TV show and ran with it. When I went researching for rich celebrities, I found only two types of information, the bragging and the downfall. The first type was announcements of large movie star paychecks, often not validated by the celebrities themselves and apparently a bit of a PR move. The second type was page after page of bankruptcies and sad stories about celebs blowing it all. Obviously, the media love to see people humiliated and knocked down from their pedestal, and this will never stop. I guess it's kind of boring to report on fiscal responsibility, and celebrities probably don't want to talk about their money fears, but it would be interesting, right? It used to be really rare to hear a celeb brag about his or her lifestyle, except on that show Cribs, which was kind of unusual at the time. Now, though, you can go on social media and see a newly minted celeb showing off his or her top-of-the-line Rolls Royce, in reality, leased, borrowed or sponsored, or Instagramming their crazy shoe closet full of $1,000 high heels. But you'll rarely hear them talk about their money lessons. They seem to be very shy on the topic. I found plenty of cautionary tales, though, and you have to read between the lines to find the beneficial money lessons that apply to you and me. Because honestly, and I'll say this over and over again, having more money doesn't change your underlying beliefs around money. I am incredibly grateful that we can learn from these celebrity women. These lessons are especially valuable if you don't personally know any rich women in your own life. I didn't know any wealthy women at all before I started to do this work. I didn't know how to act with money, except what I saw on TV and in movies. Honestly, there aren't many good role models out there, so I see that we lucky bees have a responsibility to normalize wealth for other women in our lives. Real life celebrity money lessons. This headline is from the website thisismoney.co.uk. A £90,000 wedding, 15 pairs of designer UGG boots and luxury holidays, how Tina Maloney's shameless spending made her bankrupt. Maloney, the star of TV show Shameless, explained how she's a sucker for sob stories and how her over-the-top generosity in buying gifts for friends and taking her family on all-expenses-paid holidays led to her bankruptcies. She's earned a healthy annual six figures from the show, which isn't an astronomical sum in the celebrity world. However, she spent it as if she was a millionaire. It's the exact same tale we hear when somebody blows their lottery winnings. Now, maybe you haven't taken your family on luxury holidays, but you might bail out your sister when she's behind on her rent, even if you're in debt yourself. Why does anyone need 15 pairs of UGG boots, you might think? But maybe your spending addiction is something else. Crystals. The numbers might be different, but the blocks are the same. It's easy to judge celebrities, but between the lines is a common tale that stops women from being wealthy: being over generous. It's a tale of giving to others before we give to ourselves. Mothers especially tell me that their family has the best of everything while they'll sacrifice and give to themselves last. More on that in a minute. Have you heard of the pop singer Lamal, the never-ending story guy? Well, I hadn't until I saw him featured in a Celebrity Money story. He was friends with Elton John in the 1980s and he blew all his cash before his pop career fizzled out. The feast or famine cycle is incredibly common for celebrities and normal people alike. So is sabotage. Often people think, if I could just get a big windfall, my life would be perfect. Nope. If your behavior stays the same, it doesn't matter how much money you make. Some one-hit wonders rake in the cash for years, while others spend it just as quickly as their song was in the charts. The number one song the day I was born was My Sharona by The Knack. That song still makes guitarist-songwriter Burton Iveer an amazing amount of money in radio, television and movie royalties every single year. It is far and away the major part of my income stream, and somehow it just keeps going strong. He told that to Australian news website 9MSN in an unusually candid interview around money. To be fair, it's an awesome song, and I hear it on the radio all the time. Still, it's unusual to hear about how people make their money, especially when similar success stories have completely squandered their opportunities. You remember the one-hit wonder song Gangnam Style? Korean pop sensation Psy has made more than $16 million from at the time of writing this book. That figure had doubled since I wrote the first edition of Get Rich Lucky Bitch, and it's probably growing every day. If he's careful, Psy can turn that one-hit wonder into a sizable nest egg. Or he could blow it on lavish spending like 80s rapper MC Hammer, who burned through his $30 million fortune on an expensive entourage and outrageous spending. And I laughed when I saw Psy and MC Hammer perform together at the 2012 American Music Awards with their Gangnam Style Too Legit to Quit mashup. Maybe MC gave Psy some financial advice in the green room, like, hey man, save some of that one-hit wonder cash, okay? And I know this is bordering on depressing, but here are some more examples of celebrity money gone bad. Anna Nicole Smith, a model for Guess in the 90s, got a massive inheritance from her billionaire husband, but she died broke when his kids sued for a reversal of the will. Cautionary tale, don't marry old dudes for money. It's not the best financial plan in the world, and you can waste a lot of time between the wedding and funeral, so it's not worth the risk in my opinion. There are easier ways to make money. Lois Frankel says, don't marry for money, you can borrow it cheaper. I read about a lady called Patricia Klug who at one point set the record for the largest divorce settlement ever. She went through a reported $1 billion on large gaudy jewelry, paintings and vineyards. Lesson, keep some money for a rainy day. And again, those numbers are bigger than what they are for most of us, but the sabotaging behavior is the same. My mother at 55 got a small cash windfall, and even though she needed major dental work, she bought a motorbike. Yes, really, an actual motorbike, which she rode once, got scared and sold for a loss a year later. I'm not immune for it either. When I was 20, I bought a $250 men's vintage tuxedo because I got a bonus at work, even though I was still eating cheap pasta for every meal. Basically, sometimes we make irrational decisions about money, whether we're rich, poor, or anything in between. More money doesn't automatically make you more responsible. Some people feel really uncomfortable having excess money around, so they compulsively spend it. Many of my new boot campers feel bad if they end the month with even $5 of unspent cash because they're so used to being at zero. Part of the money lesson is learning to be okay with a buffer. To see whether this is a block for you, put your hand on your heart and say, it's safe for me to have excess money. It's safe for me to have a big savings cushion. Actress Kim Basinger filed for bankruptcy in 1983 after a $20 million commercial real estate deal went south, And then Max Line Pictures sued her for backing out of that B-movie, Boxing Helena. Again, you might think, well, if I had lots of money, I'd be so responsible with it. Well, are you responsible now with the money you have? If not, change your behavior and maybe you'll attract more money, plus you won't sabotage it in the future. What about 90s singer Toni Braxton? She should be as famous and rich as Mariah Carey or Celine Dion. She certainly is talented. But she's filed for bankruptcy twice due to excessive spending, divorce, and illness. When you think how much money Mariah makes from her Christmas covers alone, it's sad to hear that Toni ended up so broke. She had to sell her personal possessions, including awards she had received, when she should be making more music and living off the royalties. American Nadia Octomom-Suleiman, who first made headlines after giving birth to octuplets in 2009, made a ton of money doing her reality TV show in the mid-2000s, but just a few years later, she had to do softcore porn to pay her bills. By the way, she did an amazing interview with both Oprah and Susie Orman, where they confronted her about her money situation. It's hard to watch, but it's enlightening and we can learn from it. As I said, every decade is going to have cautionary money tales because people don't change. Have a look at who's making the headlines today. Same old money crap. Again, the numbers are bigger for these celebrities, but the underlying principle is the same. I've seen many entrepreneurs have an incredible launch, make a ton of money, only to spend it all quickly or not put money aside for taxes. The money block can come from one of two places. Number one, this hot streak will last forever, so why bother slowing down? Or number two, I feel guilty about all this success, so I'm going to get rid of it as quickly as I can. I know lots of really successful entrepreneurs who have filed for bankruptcy for mostly the same reasons, i.e. not taking responsibility for their finances, putting their heads in the sand instead of dealing with problems, being overgenerous with others, not saving money for the future. Some of these entrepreneurs are transparent about their problems while others hide it from their followers. I'm not being a bitch here. It's easy to judge from the outside, but we can learn from it. Leona Hemsley, i.e. the Queen of Mean, once said, "We don't pay taxes. Only the little people pay taxes." And who wants to be like that? If your only role models for being rich are from the movies, then it's no wonder that you think you have to work really hard or be a raging bitch to get there. Do you remember the Friends episode where Phoebe was a stockbroker who had two heart attacks while yelling into her phone? She was nice when she was a broke singer slash waitress, but just with a bit of money, she turned into a total bitch. There are a lot of examples of this rich bitch theme in TVs and movies. And admittedly, I'm going a bit overboard here, but it's interesting to see what money messages go into our subconscious and then play out in our lives about what kind of women get rich. So humor me a little bit longer. Think of the movies you remember from your youth. Goldie Hawn in 1987's Overboard was the rich bitch who threw things and yelled like, "I almost had to wait" at her staff. She only became nice when she lived a life of poverty with hunky Kurt Russell and his ragamuffin kids. The lesson is, money makes you spoilt and bitchy. Poverty makes you humble and nice. Well, if you've internalized that, you're going to have a huge money block around earning more money. It's better to be humble, right? We had a saying in our family, it's nice to be important, but it's important to be nice. It's like you can't have both. You have to choose one or the other. And I had no idea how much that was ingrained in me until I went decluttering my money beliefs. What about the noughties, the Desperate Housewives crew? Gabby was grasping and conniving, while Brie was domineering and had serious OCD. The nice ones, on the other hand, had the most financial problems and the messiest houses. Besides, the clue is in the name. They're mostly housewives married to rich guys. The lesson is you've got to get married to get rich. And I've heard that from ordinary women too. If only I could find a rich guy to marry. Girlfriend, make your own cash. Wendy Liebman said, "My mother always said, don't marry for money, divorce for money." If you watch any of the Real Housewives shows, you'll know they're exactly the same. It doesn't matter if the women are self-made businesswomen. They're mostly shown as shallow, bitchy, catty, and incredibly ostentatious. Again, though, that's in TV. In real life, it would be a boring show if they followed me around. I don't dress up in designer clothes or have impeccable makeup. But if you've never met a real millionaire, you might assume that you have to be like that to be rich. And if being like that goes against your very grain, well, that could be a possible money block holding you back. One of my memories growing up was watching rich girl Cher in Clueless. She was sweet, but dumb and spoiled, and most of her rich friends were assholes. I had no other examples of normal wealth. Regina George in Mean Girls was a conniving bitch who stomped over everyone else in school. Alexis in Dallas, the rich brats in Gossip Girl, Miranda Priestly in The Devil Wears Prada, Cruella de Vil from 101 Dalmatians, the women in Revenge, the list goes on. The lesson for all of us, rich equals bitch. Rich women in the music industry are consistently reported as total divas. They're thought to make ridiculous demands, think J-Lo and Mariah Carey, to be aggressive perfectionists like Madonna or madcap eccentrics like Lady Gaga. Look who is being reported on today and the language being used. J-Lo apparently required an all-white decor in her dressing rooms with lilies and Jo Malone candles, plus both refrigerated and room temperature water. And of course, the papers use words like diva demands and outrageous requests. Now, I really love room temp water myself, so I get you, J-Lo. On the set of Basic Instinct 2, Sharon Stone apparently requested Pilates equipment, a chauffeured car driven by a non-smoking driver, two assistants, first-class travel, and a deluxe motorhome with air conditioning. Now, what runs through your mind when you read that list? Do you think it's outrageous, or do you think she knew her worth? And seriously, though, how gross is it when you have to travel in a smoky car? She's probably dealt with a lot of crappy conditions when she started out. Now, this is probably completely fabricated bullshit, but when Britney Spears performed in London's O2 Arena in the early 2000s, she apparently requested platters of McDonald's cheeseburgers with no buns, 100 figs and prunes, and a framed photo of Princess Diana. Divalicious. Hell, I've even heard that the Queen of England required a brand new toilet seat at every location while she toured around the world. So apparently does Mary J. Blige. Now, regardless of if any of this is true, what is the message to the average woman? Rich equals diva. These women are called demanding, despite the fact that they've gotten to the point in their careers where they just want life to be easy. What if, instead of being demanding, they simply have great boundaries in place to ensure consistent standards and just ask for what they want? My experience in traveling around the world, speaking and living in hotels is that it's annoying to try and do your job when you're surrounded by constant upheaval and change. If you hate feather pillows, are allergic to a certain type of flower, or get sick with unfamiliar food, shouldn't you be able to ask for what you need to do your job without being called a diva? I need a good latex pillow when I travel. And actually, room temp water is my preference. Wouldn't it be awesome if this was just taken care of for me? At my last live event, I specified exactly what I wanted for lunch, and I had an assistant whose job it was to refill my water. I needed to give my best, and I couldn't do it without specifying what I needed. Did I feel like a bitch? Yes, at first, but I got over it because I knew the feeling came from an underlying block around deservingness and the belief that I have to do everything myself. You're not being a diva if you ask for what you want. Most businesses have a strict operating manual. Imagine if you were a McDonald's franchisee and you decided to go rogue and change up the recipes. Nope, not happening. So if you're a performer and you're traveling around the world, why not have a strict operating manual so each show is just as high quality as the last? Of course, the men who do these things are seen as rock and roll, but the women are just divas. You'd assume that venues would take care of their guests, but without a manual in place, they probably can't because there aren't any clear instructions. Trust me, I bet that these women have learned from experience to ask for what they want and never leave it to chance. In her MTV documentary, rapper Nicki Minaj addressed these diva demands accusations so well. She said, "I put quality into what I do. I spend time, energy, effort, and every fiber of my being to give people quality. So if I turn up to a photo shoot and you've got a $50 clothes budget and some sliced pickles and a motherfucking board, you know what? No, I'm going to leave." Seriously, have you ever settled for metaphorical pickles? I know I have. I've been to speaking gigs where there was barely any tap water for the speakers or a private place to get changed. Nikki says, next time they know better. But had I accepted the pickle juice, I would be drinking pickle juice right now. Have you ever experienced the block in your own business where you felt like a bitch for correcting something or for asking for what you wanted? I used to feel bad even asking my assistant to do any work for me. Many of us have never seen examples of healthy boundaries without them being depicted in a negative way. The papers are also full of stories about successful wealthy women in the corporate world. Unfortunately, they're also shown to be aggressive, greedy, too busy to have children, too masculine, or hyper-competitive. Female politicians are routinely described as shrill and bitchy and even as witches. They're often judged on their looks and clothing rather than the message of their politics. The movies that you watched in your formative years showed you that the only women in charge and are successful are hard-nosed, ice queen, money-obsessed, mean to the underlings, bitchy bosses like Miranda Priestly in The Devil Wears Prada, Sandra Bullock's character in The Proposal, Demi Moore in Disclosure, Sigourney Weaver in Working Girl, and Jennifer Aniston in Horrible Bosses. And let me say this here, it was actually to find many more examples because so few women are depicted as leaders. Nice bosses are usually broke but well-meaning women who run a sweet, rundown bookshop, florist, or shabby chic bakery like Meg Ryan in You've Got Mail or Kristen Wiig's character in Bridesmaids. The message is, it's okay to be an entrepreneur as long as you're not making any money out of it. When Anne Hathaway's character became good at her job in The Devil Wears Prada, she lost her boyfriend and her best friend. The lesson that we're absorbing, rich equals ball breaker. Watch the messages in today's movies and shows. They're so much better but still have a long way to go. Basically, rich women are shown to be demanding divas, spoilt, mean, bitchy to their friends, overly competitive or aggressive, pretty on the outside but mean on the inside, conniving, materialistic, unethical, horrible to people they perceive as underlings, lonely, much divorced, shallow and superficial. Apparently, rich women will henpeck their husbands, kill puppies, lie, cheat, poison and steal to get what they want. They are gold diggers, tax evaders, wicked stepmothers and evil queens. Can you think of any nice rich women in the movies? Usually this only happens when they go out into the world and experience poverty, overcome a huge hardship or are rescued and married into wealth with a bland Prince Charming. Lots of these women are only happy when they finally ditch their pursuit of success and realize that money isn't everything or love is more important than a career. Holy crap. No wonder this message is so pervasive. I hear normal women say things like, I'd rather be happy than be rich, or helping people is more important than money all the time. And yes, of course, but in real life, you don't have to choose between the two. Movies aside, if any of this is ringing true for you, take some time to deconstruct your fears about becoming rich to find out where they're coming from. Even if you think you don't have any fears, play along because trust me, there is something holding you back. Giving your power away to others. In her book, Nice Girls Don't Get Rich, Lois P. Frankel cites giving away power, especially to men and other authority figures, as one of the main reasons that women don't get rich. Unfortunately, we're taught at a young age to believe that the men in our lives know more about money than we do. Because of this, many women feel scared and intimidated to talk about it. Lois says, don't relinquish your say in financial matters in order to avoid bruised egos. If you do, you only lengthen the time it takes for you to become financially free. By the way, her book is excellent and I highly recommend adding it to your financial success library. That's probably why this is another example from the celebrity cautionary tale file, giving up responsibility to others. This one has ruined many a celeb and can be a huge warning to a lot of women. Maybe you do it too. I certainly have. Nowadays, you hear about a lot of celebrity dirty laundry, but sometimes it was very hidden. Do you remember 90s girl group TLC? Their album Crazy Sexy Cool sold more than 10 million copies. But the girls had to declare bankruptcy soon after because their contract meant that they earned very little once everyone else was paid. And they just assumed that their advisors knew what they were doing. Have you ever signed a contract that you didn't really read or agreed to something that you later regretted? I have. I've lost huge amounts of money on events because I didn't read the contract properly or allowed my event planner to sign on my behalf. I've agreed to taking low percentages in joint ventures because I didn't want to negotiate better terms and look like a greedy bitch. Pop star Rihanna filed a lawsuit against her former accountants in 2014. Apparently the firm took 22% of her tour revenues while she earned less than 6%. They represented her from age 16 till her early 20s when she finally fired them. Hopefully, she learned from that painful experience, but lots of us don't and repeat the same lessons in different ways. Yes, we're talking about millions with her, but remember, the blocks are the same. That sounds crazy until you realize that maybe you've done a similar thing. Have you ever paid everyone else in your business before you paid yourself? Agreed to a profit share that didn't take into consideration how much extra you worked? I have. And so have many of my business friends and boot campers. But when you recognize it as sabotage, you can learn from it. American Idol 2014 winner Fantasia almost lost her home to foreclosure, even after the life-changing opportunity of winning the number one singing competition in the world at the time. In her autobiography, she admitted that she was functionally illiterate and was unable to read her contracts. She trusted her management to act in her best interests. Guess what? Nobody will act in your best interests better than yourself. And ladies, we have to get comfortable with reading the fine print. Yoko Ono sued EMI for $10 million, claiming that she was cheated out of royalties from John Lennon's estate. Who was giving her legal advice? Why didn't someone flag that for her? In 2012, Lauryn Hill, the lead singer of the Fugees at the time, pled guilty to tax evasion and faced a 3-year jail sentence. Who was advising her on her taxes? Did she forget to put tax money away, as so many of us do? Again, read the papers to see how common this story is today. Money blocks are timeless. Yet again, the numbers might be bigger for these celebrities, but have you ever felt cheated out of your just rewards or got your taxes in a tangle? In my first year of business, I filed my tax return late because I was so disorganized and I didn't get my information to my accountant in time. That wasn't just because it was my first year of business either. Experienced businesswomen are prone to procrastination too. Many women just sign their tax return without really looking at it. Guess who gets in trouble when problems crop up during an audit? Not your accountant. You do. A reality TV star accuses her ex-husband of stealing all the money in their bank account and leaving her broke, despite all her TV show money. How does that happen? Well, do you know how much money that goes in and out of your joint account? Do you have your own savings for a rainy day? Many women believe that their husbands know more about money than they do, or that they aren't good with numbers. This isn't true. This is a block to clear. It doesn't matter how powerful or rich the celebrity, they aren't immune to giving away their power either. And I found several quotes that made me think. For example, while searching the telegraph.co.uk's regular celebrity money feature, I found these interesting nuggets. From self-proclaimed rich chav Katie Price, aka Jordan, a former Sun newspaper Page 3 topless model and now an empire builder, she was asked, "Are you a saver or a spender?" She says, "I spend, but I have people around me who save for me. My brother and another guy look after my money. I don't know what I've got. At least I don't know to the penny what I've got." Did that make you a bit twitchy? And then from Australia's own Olivia Newton-John of Grease fame, "Do you use a financial advisor?" She says, "Well, I have a wonderful husband, John, who's a businessman. I feel more comfortable turning to him. He has my best interests at heart and I trust him. He's very knowledgeable and I've learned a lot from him about running my business interests and my finances." No, Sandy, but guess who's done the same thing? Me. My husband, Mark, and I signed up to see a financial advisor just after our daughter was born. Honestly, and I can say this without bragging too much, we had to do this because my business had become so successful we needed the extra advice. I'd finally become comfortable with having excess cash in my life, unlike the first 2 years of business when I'd spent it all. I was nursing Willow at the time, so when we went into the meeting, I thought, if she cries, I'll go outside and I'll leave the men to talk about money. What? It was essentially my money we were talking about. Okay, yes, our money because we were married and had joint accounts, but I had earned this spare money through my business. Yet there I was, ready to abdicate decisions about it to the men because I assumed they would make better decisions. Wake up call. Within a few seconds, I went through this mental process that you can learn in the book. Then I took a deep breath and I said, Mark, Willow needs to be changed. Could you go change her while I tell these guys more about my business? In a way, it was a bit of a power move, but I needed to take control of my story ASAP so I didn't sabotage my perception of myself as a powerful woman. So even though the examples of the celebrity women I've highlighted seem dated, human behavior doesn't move on. You could pick up the paper today, we'll go online, but you know what I mean, and see the same stories. And in fact, they're normal women's stories too. Nothing is either mentioned or admitted about bad financial management, poor decision making, excessive shopping or drugs and alcohol. The women simply trusted others to make their decisions for them or they put their head in the sand. And seriously, even though the sums are different, how many of us have done the same? Do you have money regrets from the past? All of us do. Being a smart, successful woman doesn't mean you don't have money blocks. Have you ever thought, if only I had more money, I could breathe easier? Well, honestly, more money won't help if you don't deal with the underlying money blocks. Otherwise, more money, same problem. Britney Spears' divorce papers from KFED showed that she spent practically all of her $737,000 income each month. Yes, that's monthly income. It went mostly on rental properties for her and her family, entertainment and restaurants. And yes, she'll still get royalties from her songs for years to come. But what happens when those royalties dry up? How many of us live paycheck to paycheck? We think that if we earn more money, that problem would be solved, but it wouldn't. And even though we don't earn as much as Britney, the default behavior is the same, right? Some women even think that they have to live close to the edge or they'll lose something essential in their work. They think that the adrenaline is a good thing that makes them hustle harder or that their creative muse only shows up at the last minute. No, it doesn't have to be that way. That's an old story and you can release it. Please realize that this celebrity feature isn't intended to make fun of anyone. Instead, we're using these stories as cautionary and extreme examples of what normal women do too. Basically, celebrities are just like us. They simply have higher incomes and greater extremes. They spend beyond their means, rarely save money, give their power away to many in their lives and make bad money decisions just like we do. I've heard the same thing many times from real life women. It's too confusing for me. It's easier if he manages it. I don't know where my money goes. I don't know the first thing about money. I'm always broke at the end of the month. I hate dealing with the bills. I have no idea how much debt we have. Money stresses me out too much. I don't open my credit card statements. Or I just need more money. That would solve everything. It can be tough to admit that you sabotage your money by giving away your power to the men in your life, or that you overspend on shopping, or that you're overly generous. However, self-awareness is the key to breaking free of old habits and allowing yourself to receive more. The good news is that these realizations are also incredibly freeing and transformational. When you get rid of everything between your ears that's not conducive to earning money and then follow the rest of the manifesting formula, it becomes easy. Self-awareness will set you free and give you lifelong tools to deal with inevitable challenges in future situations. No joke. I've seen this happen myself with all the clients I work with and in my own life. For years, I tried to work for myself. I was a born entrepreneur, but I never earned any money for it. Yes, a dollar here and there, but nothing serious. Definitely not enough to quit my job, which I desperately wanted to do. The month I decided to work on absolutely decluttering my life of every negative money belief and fear, I made $225 in my business. Not impressed? Okay, granted, it's not that exciting. However, what you need to know is it's more than I'd made in 18 months of one of my practice businesses on the side of my full-time job. I celebrated every penny of that $225 because I knew it was just the start. It finally felt easy and fun, and I wasn't afraid anymore. At least I wasn't until I hit my next money barrier, but that's further along in this book. And don't worry, I'll share all of my embarrassing money stories, I promise. I had more decluttering to go, so I made it a game. The more I cleared, the more money I made. In fact, I doubled my income in the second month to $450 and then doubled it again, $885. I kept clearing my money beliefs, and it becomes addictive when you see the results and uncovering even more areas where I held myself back. Each time I broke through an income barrier, I uncovered even more negative self-beliefs and fears. One big fear was that it was a fluke. The first time I made over $10,000 in a month, I honestly felt sick, and a little voice inside me said, "No further. This is as far as you'll go." I ignored it, and I kept decluttering and following the manifesting formula. Soon after, I had my first $10,000 week, then my first $10,000 day, and now I've made multiple six figures in an hour. But I'll reach new limits and I'll think the same thing. This is it. No more for you. Who do you think you are? Just because I wrote this book, don't think that I'm perfect with money. I still work on my money blocks every day. More money doesn't give me lifetime immunity. There's always more work to do. As David Nagel says, new level, new devil. Each time you declutter an old belief, you'll break through something you previously thought was impossible. If you're stuck, you just need to do more decluttering work around what you believe is possible. As I work through my money blocks, I keep making more money. And I'm not ashamed to tell you that I make a lot of money now and have even bigger goals. And if all of these numbers are stressing you out, that's okay. Keep reading and you'll discover exactly why. Guess what? I didn't get some fancy degree. I didn't suddenly become smarter. I didn't become a drug dealer. I didn't win the lottery. I just decluttered my beliefs around money. Who are you trying to impress? What about keeping up with the Joneses, or for the Elton Johns in the case of pop star Lamal? Who do you try and impress with your money? Are there people in your life that you feel inferior to? Do you ever go on lavish shopping sprees you can't afford in order to feel good about yourself? And this one can be so tempting because we have access to so much cheap credit. When I first moved from our tiny apartment to an oceanfront penthouse, I still kept my relatively crappy car. And even now, I drive a pretty moderately priced one that isn't exactly a typical millionaire's car. And yes, I could buy something flashy, but I'm also realistic about my lifestyle, which includes carting around small kids and beach gear. I'd only be making this upgrade to impress other people, and that is the worst reason to spend money. I can tell you from experience how expensive it can be to impress people. It took us 3 years to pay off our wedding, which we really couldn't afford at the time, because we wanted to impress our friends and family. We overcommitted to a huge venue and then upped the guest list to fill it. It's a common sabotage and probably the easiest to fall into, especially if you're friends with other people who spend beyond their means too. When money makes you feel guilty. Let's talk guilt and money. Ooh. I've heard from two separate friends how a sizable inheritance made them feel so guilty that they blew it within weeks. One friend got a huge insurance payout after her brother died of cancer, and the money made her feel sick, as if she was profiting from his death. So she blew it on a few holidays that she didn't even enjoy, instead of a down payment towards her first house, which was a big dream. The sad story of 9/11 widow Kathy Trant is a classic case of guilt sabotage. She received $5 million in insurance payouts for the death of her husband, Dan, who had worked on the 104th floor of the World Trade Center. According to the New York Post, she spent $2 million on home repairs and more than $500,000 to take friends and relatives on holidays. She also gave friends sums of $20,000 or $50,000 to pay off debt and buy real estate, and she bought two women boob jobs. One was a beauty therapist she had just met. It's a heartbreaking story because the money was frittered away on largely meaningless things, leaving her broke and, of course, still grief-stricken. Can you imagine being in the same situation, how hard it would be to keep that money knowing where it came from and why? When people leave you money in their will, I'm sure they intend it to be enjoyed and used to provide comfort and stability. You can't manifest someone's death by setting big financial goals, and you're not disrespecting them or celebrating their death by spending the money in ways that will enrich your life. It doesn't disrespect their memory, it honors it. But even just the fear that this will happen can sabotage your goals. I've had boot campers say that they're scared to set a big money goal because they're worried they'll cause a death and receive the money through an inheritance. Release this fear. And if you're really worried about it, add a qualifying statement like "for everyone's highest good" to the end of your goals. But the underlying block is that for money to come, something bad has to happen to balance it out. That's not true, and you can declutter this one with the tools that come in later chapters. I've personally seen people get large windfalls of money only to blow it on over-the-top presents for their kids or expensive crap like motorbikes, cars, jet skis, boats, etc., that they can't even afford to maintain or by giving it away to others. It didn't bring them any long-lasting joy or security. When this happens, it's self-sabotage, pure and simple. As tempting as the fantasy is, winning the lottery or getting a huge injection of cash won't solve anything. Now, we had one big example in our town. A local tradesman turned billionaire bought a private jet, a helicopter, sports cars, and lots of real estate within a very short space of time. Over the next few years, it all got repossessed, piece by piece, as he got sued or filed for bankruptcy. Making lots of money certainly did not make him a nicer or smarter person. Going back to Jennifer Lawrence, she said that there was a major reason she hadn't negotiated for more money on the movie American Hustle. "I didn't want to keep fighting over millions of dollars that, frankly, due to two franchises, I don't need." So you might wonder, well, why would you feel guilty about money? But this is actually a really common money block, and it's usually completely unconscious. I've had boot campers tell me that they've sabotaged going full out on their financial goals because they felt like they should be happy with what they've already achieved. Others told me they felt incredibly guilty about making easy money doing something they loved when other people were struggling. I've completely sabotaged a relaunch of my money boot camp because I felt like I didn't need the money. I wasn't going to starve if I didn't relaunch, so I kept procrastinating that relaunch. You might think, what a lucky bitch problem to have. But trust me, this is a common block that happens at all levels of income. It's okay to have more than you need. Should you give money away? When I ask women what they would do with a big financial windfall, the overwhelming response is that they'd give it away to family and friends. Now, that sounds awesome, but let's examine some of the blocks that hide behind this seemingly generous gesture. Being overly generous is a trait that plagues many women. What should feel good becomes an overwhelming need to be liked. What starts off as charitable turns into being bled dry. And I believe in the power of giving, but when it comes at your own personal cost, it becomes self-sabotage. I'm not even talking about charitable giving here. Are you always the first or only person to reach for the restaurant check? Do you lend money and never ask for it to be repaid back? Do you feel overly responsible for other people's money dramas? You might not be supporting an entourage of friends and family members like some celebrities, but being too generous is often a disguise for your inability to receive from others. Giving shouldn't bankrupt you. Giving shouldn't block more abundance coming to you or keep others from learning their own financial lessons. Don't leave yourself a victim by over-giving. Instead, make sure your giving feels good and still honors you and your financial goals first. When it comes to lending money to friends and family, follow personal financial guru Susie Orman's advice. Don't loan money if you've got credit card debt yourself, prepare a written contract for repayment, and don't lend to enable someone else's poor money management. More money won't solve their money blocks either. You could give them all you have, but the sabotaging behavior won't go away. Susie says, men and women both have an equal capacity to make money, but they want money for different reasons. Men want money for power and women want it for comfort, and usually not their own comfort, but the comfort of others in their lives. By the way, I saw Susie Orman speak at a Hay House conference. She started her speech with, "I stand before you, a very, very, very wealthy woman." And I loved that opening line because it was so inspiring to see a woman completely owning her power and not minimizing her success. I've stood on stage now and said the same thing and encouraged the audience to say it out loud too. Try it and see what comes up for you. Susie understands that a lot of women feel scared about money, and I highly recommend her books. She says, don't panic. When the topic turns to money, so many women fall into a horrible default mold of, I can't do this, or I don't know what to do. I want you to commit to 1 month of telling yourself, yes, I can. That crucial change in attitude is the first step. Many women sabotage themselves by thinking that they aren't smart enough to understand money. You are. You are smart enough. Do you think Sofia Vergara has been judged as not smart enough because of her boobs or her accent? You bet she has. You might have your own BS excuses too. Maybe you failed math at school. Maybe you think that you don't deserve success because you grew up a certain way. Nobody is born knowing how to deal with money, but you can learn. As I said earlier, I still use a calculator every day because honestly, I suck at even doing simple sums. You have to declutter those pesky beliefs that tell you you can't be rich because of X, Y, Z, usually ridiculously silly reasons. You are what a wealthy woman looks like. Why not you? Are you getting how important this is? It's tempting to subscribe to the lottery win fantasy or the complimentary upgrade fantasy, but there are quicker and more certain ways to manifest money than winning it. You have far more chance of becoming a millionaire through your own ingenuity than through an arbitrary lottery win. We all like to think that one day we'll be at the back of the plane, having bought the cheapest ticket, and the stewardess will come up and say, grab your bags, you're going to first class. And I know this does happen occasionally, but it's rare for the person on the plane who has invested the least to be upgraded. Generally, airlines reward people who have a history of investing in themselves. That's why frequent flyers are the first to be upgraded. Another way to look at it is this. God helps those who help themselves. And you know this is true in life, and it's also being proved in studies. Read Richard Wiseman's book, The Luck Factor, to see his studies of people who believe themselves to be lucky or unlucky. It's fascinating reading as Wiseman confirms that luck is largely self-fulfilling. He says happiness doesn't just flow from success, it actually causes it. I remember one of the experiments in The Luck Factor vividly. The researchers placed a $5 bill outside the research center to see who noticed it and picked it up. Sure enough, the majority of people who found it were the self-proclaimed lucky people. Why? Some people are convinced that lucky things happen to them all the time, so they constantly anticipate good news and opportunities. Others are convinced that the world is against them, so they're always waiting for the bad news. Which group would you rather be in? According to Wiseman, there are ways you can become more lucky. Number one, maximize your chance opportunities. Build your network, have a relaxed attitude to life, and be open to new experiences. This is exactly how I manifested the free travel experience. I had a big network of people and just happened to hear about the competition from a friend who knew about my travel goal. Number two, listen to your lucky hunches. Take steps to develop your intuition and pay attention to your gut feelings. So for me, this is time away from my computer, having quiet space in my brain, and putting myself in situations where I feel rich. That's where my intuition feels enhanced. Number three, expect good fortune. Expect good things to happen to you, keep going in the face of failure, and tell yourself that you're a lucky person. When I'm in this frame of mind, it's amazing how lucky things just happen. Number four, turn your bad luck into good. See the positive side of bad luck and don't dwell on bad situations. For me, this means becoming a reverse paranoid and assuming that everything that happens is ultimately for my highest good, even if it looks bad on the outside. Oh crap, you're thinking, I'm not lucky at all. Well, first of all, if you think you're not lucky, the universe will go out of its way to prove it to you. If you're always saying things like, I'm so unlucky, oh, typical, another bill. This always happens to me. Why does the universe hate me? Nothing good ever happens to me, and why can't I be lucky too? I hate to tell you this, but you are creating it. Luck can be learned, and isn't that why you're listening to this book? But it can take practice if you're used to being negative. I'm not super positive all the time, but I'm pretty lucky. It's because I'm constantly saying things like this to myself and others. I'm so lucky. Thanks, universe, for taking care of me. Oh, another coin in the street. Woohoo! An unexpected bill? This must be the message from the universe to pay attention. Thanks. Good things happen to me every day. I'm so blessed and grateful. Oh, this always happens to me. Or you'll never guess what I manifested today. See the difference? Lucky people are overwhelmingly grateful and take responsibility for their lives. The unlucky people, by contrast, are pessimistic and hard done by. Even when something bad happens, I always look for the good because my underlying story is that the universe is always looking after my highest good. And actor Neil Patrick Harris agrees with me. He says a lot of people would take getting rear-ended in their car as an example of why their life continues to be one roadblock after another. And I think a different person can see the same fender bender and be grateful it wasn't worse. That allows them an opportunity to learn something from it, sort of take some sort of positive element from that. I think if you try to angle your life in those ways, then fate, destiny, karma opens itself up to you and allows for more growth. Now, I've had car accidents where that's exactly what I did. I thanked the universe for the wake-up call to pay more attention or to get a safer car. Manifesting outrageous abundance requires vigilance towards your everyday thoughts about your ability to create luck and abundance. It means you have to be really careful about what you say to yourself and others about money. At the beginning, it might feel forced, like you're just pretending to be happy, but that's okay. Pretending is like rehearsing for success and your brain can't tell the difference anyway. Martha Beck says, if you ask how they make decisions, lucky people will talk about tuning into information and instincts, while unlucky people often mention pushing away the uncomfortable feeling they were heading for trouble. I remember when I first read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I think I was about 16 years old. The most important points I remember were, number one, eye contact, two, giving compliments, three, mirroring people. So I started practicing. Even though it felt fake at first, while I was consciously kind of maintaining eye contact and trying to think of something to compliment, after a while, it became natural and just something that I do. Ditto with the positive thoughts. It's only when you become aware of your negative thoughts and feelings about money that you'll be able to switch them around. It might feel like hard work at first because it's a deeply ingrained habit, but then it will become second nature. The two examples I gave above about lucky and unlucky people were pretty obvious ones, so don't assume that you've decluttered everything about money and skip to the next chapter. Your negative beliefs about your ability to be wealthier might be subtle, but just as destructive. But that's where it starts to get fun, though. Imagine easily breaking through your next income barrier just by re-examining your thoughts about money. You don't have to get smarter. You don't have to change gender, get a boob job, or grow 3 inches taller. You don't have to get skinnier before you deserve more money. You don't have to turn into an evil genius or do anything unethical. Edward Lewis, played by Richard Gere in Pretty Woman, said, "You and I are both similar creatures, Vivian. We both screw people for money." Now, the rules that we have about ourselves and when we can actually be rich are kind of ridiculous. That's why, as you go through this book, I'll get you to ruthlessly examine your current beliefs about what you're capable of. I'll also teach you amazing tools that you can use to keep taking yourself through each income barrier as you work through the money manifesting formula. Seriously, knowing and mastering this stuff will make you feel like you've got a superpower. What if becoming rich was actually easy? For women, one of the very common fears about becoming rich is that you'll have to have your nose to the grindstone 24/7, that it'll be such hard work that you probably shouldn't bother, that your kids will suffer if you get richer. Maybe you're already rapidly approaching burnout and thinking, another 5-10 years of this to get rich? I'll never make it. Maybe you have an underlying story that there's a strong correlation between money and hard work. So if you want a double income, you have to work twice as hard. Wrong. In fact, that belief actually stops you from leveraging your business, outsourcing, delegating, or otherwise making it easier. I've had clients who just couldn't seem to slow down. They felt like they should be working all the time because they believe it's the only way to get rich. So paradoxically, they never felt rich. They just kept running, 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 and never getting anywhere. Catherine Whitehorn said, "The easiest way for your children to learn about money is for you not to have any." One of my boot campers, Jen, had a fear that being successful meant total sacrifice. Her dad had a low-paying job that he loved, but which caused tension in her family. He had opportunities to get paid more, but refused them because it would mean time away and longer hours. So Jen did extremely well in her career, but burnt herself out trying to prove she was living up to her potential, unlike her dad. To her, success was all or nothing, black or white. She believed you could either love what you do and not reach the pinnacle of success materially, or you could have a lot of money and a corporate job that was really stressful.